ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4. Ambarish Maharaj offended by Durvasa Muni. Text 29. Ariradaishu Krishnam.
Ariradaishu Krishnam.
Mahishya Tulyashilaya. Yukta samvatsaram viro, tadara dvadashi vratam. Translation. To worship Lord Krishna, Maharaj Ambarish, along with his queen, who was equally qualified, observed the vow of Ekadashi and Dvadashi for 1 year. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. To observe Ekadashi Vrata and Dvadasi Vrata means to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those interested in advancing in Krishna consciousness must observe Ekadashi Vrata regularly. Maharaj Ambarish's queen was equally as qualified as the king. Therefore, it was possible for Maharaj Ambarish to engage his life in household affairs. In this regard, the word Tulya Shilaya is very significant. Unless a wife is equally as qualified as her husband, household affairs are very difficult to continue. Chanakya Pandit advises that a person in such a situation should immediately give up household life and become a vanaprastha or sannyasi. Mata yasya grihe nasti bharya chapriya vadini aranyam tena gantavyam yataranyam tatagraham. A person who has no mother at home or whose wife is not agreeable with him should immediately go away to the forest, because human life is meant for spiritual advancement only. One's wife must be helpful in this endeavor. Otherwise, there is no need of household life. Translation again. To worship Lord Krishna, Maharaj Ambarish, along with his queen, who was equally qualified, observed the vow of Ekadasi and Dvadasi for 1 year. So we are reading a most instructive portion of Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Maharaj Ambarish. In the previous verses, we read how King Ambarish was completely detached from his family and royal opulence. But although he was detached, he did not leave them, but rather he remained in his position and accepted what could be considered material things, because he could engage them in the service of the Lord. And as preachers also, we may accept many material things, so-called material things, to engage them in the service of the Lord. But we should not be attached to them. If Krishna sends them, we can use them in the service of the Lord, and if he doesn't send them or takes them away, we continue to serve the Lord with equal cheerfulness. So the same principles that operate for a householder operate for a preacher. They are universal principles. Yukta Vairagya. Anasaktasya Vishayan. One should not be attached to the objects of the senses, but one can accept them for engagement in the service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explained that if we accept something for sense gratification, that is maya. But if we reject something that can be used in Krishna's service, that is also a type of maya. So we have to be right in the middle, very Prabhupada explained it. If you go to enjoyment, that sense gratification, and if you go towards renunciation of things that are meant to be used in Krishna's service, that's also a type of deviation. So we have to be just in the middle. And that is possible only by bhakti, by being situated in pure devotional service. That is our endeavor. And that position is achieved by the regular practice of bhakti yoga, especially the offenseless chanting of the holy names. Offenseless chanting of the holy names cleanses the heart. Cheto Darpano Marjanam. When the heart is cleansed, we no longer identify with the body. We no longer have the conception that I am the body and everything in relation to my body belongs to me. But we realize that we are eternal servants of Krishna. And all living entities are eternal servants of Krishna. And bhakti means to please Krishna. Whatever we do in devotional service is meant to please Krishna. So observing Ekadasi Vrat and Dvadasi Vrat are also meant to please Krishna. Whatever we do in devotional service is meant to please Krishna. Now, we might think, well, I have to do this and that so I can advance in devotional service. We may have the desire to advance in devotional service. And that also is not a material desire. But what does it mean to advance in devotional service? To advance in devotional service means to purify and intensify our desire to please Krishna. So ultimately, everything is meant to please Krishna, even the desire to advance really means the desire to improve our service to Krishna, or to increase our service to Krishna. Now, Grihastha Ashram, like every other ashram, has its specific challenges. All the ashrams are meant for purification. The word ashram itself comes from ashraya, which means shelter. So in every ashram, we are meant to take shelter of Krishna. Grihastha ashram, the core of Grihastha ashram is the relationship between the husband and wife. And as the verse says, and as Srila Prabhupada has emphasized, Tulya Shilaya means that the wife was equally qualified as the husband. And the Vedic scriptures contain advice about the different varnas and ashrams for gradual purification and elevation of the living entities. And of course, the culmination is pure devotional service, which is described most elaborately in Srimad Bhagavatam. But even Srimad Bhagavatam discusses the different ashrams, because in sadhana bhakti, one is still conditioned to some extent, and therefore one has to take into consideration one's conditioned nature and deal with it in such a way that it doesn't disturb our efforts in spiritual advancement. So to live, you know, to be properly situated in varna and ashram, so that one can peacefully engage in the practices of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting and remembering, is an important factor. It's true, devotional service in and of itself is transcendental, but because we're conditioned, we want to find a situation in which we can best prosecute Krishna consciousness. And for most people, for a good part of their lives, that means Grihastha Ashram. In my own case, I never entered Grihastha Ashram. So my speaking on the subject is based more on hearing from others and observing people. But again, the same principles in a higher sense operate in the life of any devotee, whatever ashram he's in or she is in. But in my case, when I had been a devotee when I had been in the Association of Devotees for about 2 years, Srila Prabhupada read an article that I had written in Boston had appeared in Back to Godhead magazine at the time we were in Gorakhpur in India. Srila Prabhupada was living and with his disciples at Sri Krishna Niketan, which is a beautiful estate that had been the personal residence of Hanuman Prasad Poddar, who was the founder of Gita Press. And we were there as hosts, as guests of Hanuman Prasad Poddar. So one afternoon he asked to see me, Srila Prabhupada. He said, "I have read your article, and it is very nice, and you should write." And he elaborated on that instruction. And then he asked, "Do you ever think of getting married?" And I said, not really, except that I see that all the GBCs are married. I was under the impression it was sort of like a higher stage of devotional service to be a GBC. So Srila Prabhupada replied, "You will never be GBC." And then Srila Prabhupada said that the urges of the body are like itches, and when we scratch the itch, the itching might subside temporarily, but then it comes back more powerfully. So rather than scratching the itch, it's better to tolerate. And he said not only, the sexual urge, but the eating, sleeping, any of the demands of the body. So from then I just took it as an instruction, and I didn't think of it. But still, the process of purification is more or less the same in every ashram. It's just a difference of situation. And the situation, should be as conducive as possible. And in Grihastha Ashram, because the basic element is the relationship between the husband and wife, the scriptures give much advice on that point, that the husband and wife should be of similar qualification. There's the story of Krishna and Rukmini. Rukmini was very docile and submissive, and Krishna wanted to see her become angry. A little angry, he wanted to see that side of her. So, to tease her, he said that actually, I am not a proper match for you. You are very exalted, you come from a high royal family. Nobody even knows what I am. I'm a cowherd. I lived as a cowherd. And you're so highly educated, and I went to Gurukul for for a while, but I'm not as educated as you are. And so he was pointing out all the areas in which she was more qualified than he was, supposedly. And then he suggested that that if she wanted, she could leave him because he wasn't qualified to be her husband. So as soon as Krishna suggested that she leave him, that very thought was so overwhelming for her that she fainted. She just, that thought of being separated from Krishna was too much for her to bear. And she fell to the ground. She couldn't understand that Krishna was just teasing her, joking. But Srila Prabhupada comments that although Krishna was joking with her, but the point is very serious, that the husband and wife should be of similar qualification. And then the marriage is congenial. Now, we never get a perfect match in terms of, you know, psychophysical characteristics, because everyone is individual. But the main point in a devotee marriage is Krishna and service to Krishna. And if both the husband and wife have the desire, strong desire to serve Krishna, then those incompatibilities, or not even incompatibilities, but little differences, can be adjusted in the mood of service to the Lord. But when Krishna and service to Krishna are not the center, and one's false ego and mind and senses become the center, then there are so many problems, as we see in the material world. There's so many problems because each person is selfish. He or she wants, you know, what's favorable for her sense gratification. And if he or she thinks that the other one is not useful enough for his or her sense gratification, then separate. One of my god brothers, who was married to one of my god sisters, for many years, eventually got divorced, and I hadn't met him for many years. We were together in India, but then he moved to another part of the world, and after 2 decades or more, you know, we finally met, and I asked what happened. And he told me the whole story. I mean, it could be the other way, but it was just like that in this particular case. But he told me the whole story of how, you know, his wife always wanted, you know, more material facility, and wanted her husband to spend more time with her, give her more attention. And, you know, it was building up for years and years. And finally, my godbrother decided, all right, you know, I want to make her happy. I don't want her to be in so much distress. So he became involved in business. The two of them moved further from the temple, got a nice house where they were living together. And eventually, in that situation, they got divorced. And my godbrother said that although he was giving her much more of what she had asked for, what happened was that instead of the focal point being Krishna and Krishna's service, somehow the focal point became the home and like their relationship, the material facilities. And when that became the focal point, she decided he wasn't, the right one. She could do better with someone else. So this is a very important point, keeping Krishna in the center. There's another fact. Of course, Srila Prabhupada is suggesting in the purport that if the wife is not ready to cooperate with the husband in Krishna consciousness, he should leave her. And that actually happened with Srila Prabhupada. I think you know the story. And it's described in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. Everyone should read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. But there are some intricacies here. Some other factors to consider, and one is children, if there are children in the marriage. In earlier periods, Vedic culture was stronger, and there was a very good support system, for the wife and the children, even apart from the husband. But I'm sure in any case, they didn't even have divorce. Srila Prabhupada said that there was no word for divorce. They didn't even have it. And Chanakya Pandit has the maxim that quarrels between husband and wife should not be taken seriously. And Srila Prabhupada explains that, if the husband and wife have a quarrel, and, the husband goes around the town complaining about the wife and accusing the wife, and the wife goes around the town complaining about the husband, accusing the husband, no one takes it seriously, because there was no divorce. Everyone knew, let them let off some steam and, we'll hear them. But they would never take it seriously because there was no divorce. They knew at the end of the day, they'd go back to each other and they would continue. Just like the rumbling of clouds and thunder, but no rain comes from it. Or the budding of goats. They butt their heads and seem very serious about it, and then they just forget about it and go their own way. Has no significance. So because there was no divorce, so people didn't take the disagreement seriously, because, at the end of the day, they would be together again, doing their duties. And that is the first instruction, the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, that one must do one's duty. And devotional service involves doing one's duty. It's true that as one advances, or she may have a more spontaneous desire to engage in service, but still one does one's duty to set the example for others. Like one disciple wrote Srila Prabhupada to say that he was so enthusiastic to serve Srila Prabhupada that he didn't need the crutch of chanting 16 rounds to maintain his enthusiasm for service. And Srila Prabhupada wrote back, even if you are a Paramahansa, still you should chant your rounds to set the example for others. Even Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that he also has to follow the rules and regulations, because if he didn't, he would be setting the wrong example and people would be ruined. Society would be in chaos. So we must, yad yad acharati shrestha, we must be exemplary in our behavior. So Maharaj Ambarish was completely detached from wife, children, horses, chariots, elephants, all the different paraphernalia of royal opulence. But he still remained in his position as a king, but he did everything for the pleasure of the Lord. And his wife, who was equally qualified, cooperated with him. And that should be our effort. One of my favorite parts of Srimad Bhagavatam are the prayers of Queen Kunti. And in her prayers, she prays to Lord Krishna, please sever my ties of affection for my kinsmen, the Vrishnis and the Pandavas. And Srila Prabhupada makes the point that both of her families, she was born in the family of the Yadu dynasty. Her brother was Vasudev, who became the father of Lord Krishna. And in her married life, her sons, the Pandavas, were all great devotees of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada makes the point that affection for devotees is within the range of devotional service. So why is Kunti praying to Krishna to sever her ties of affection for her family members, all of whom were great devotees of Krishna? And Srila Prabhupada explains that when she prayed for the ties of affection to be severed, she meant the ties that were based on the body, bodily affection. He said, apart from the attachment based on the body, there is the relationship based on the soul, soul to soul, with the central point being the super soul, the supreme soul. So when she prays for her ties of affection to be severed, she means the affection that is based on the body, not the soul in relation to the super soul. So in any relationship we have, in any ashram, we want to purify the relationship. We want the relationship or affection related to the body to decrease, and we want the spiritual dimension of the relationship to become more and more prominent. It can apply to people, it can apply to material things, like money. Money can be used in Krishna's service, money can also be used for sense gratification. So we don't necessarily reject money, but we try to purify our relationship with it, so we use it more and more for Krishna's service and less sense gratification. And that is yukta vairagya, anasatasya vishayan. And the same applies to preachers. We have facility for preaching, but we should use the facility actually for preaching. There will be, even if we don't have a conscious desire to use it for sense gratification, but our conditioning is such that in the presence of certain material things, we become inclined to get some personal benefit out of it. But our attempt should be to keep our relationships pure, based only on the service of the Lord. And again, the best way to develop that consciousness, of course, one is by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and the other is, again, by offenseless, attentive chanting of the holy names. Those two processes will cleanse the heart of the desire for material enjoyment. And then one will be able to move in the world, interact with people, use the things of the world in the service of the Lord, and not become entangled. But you know, as long as we're still somewhat conditioned, you know, in the stage of sadhana bhakti, we have to be vigilant, we have to be introspective. You know, am I doing this for Krishna or for my sense gratification? Again, not necessarily reject the object or one's relationship with the object, but purify it. But it may come to the stage when one does reject it. But that also should be done to please Krishna. I mean, there's the Bhagavad Gita describes renunciation and the different modes. There's also renunciation and the mode of passion. If something's too troublesome, just renounce it. There's renunciation and the mode of passion. Not for the sake of one's duty, not to please Krishna, but just because it's too troublesome. Sometimes managers, they want to renounce their... and you know, sometimes it might be favorable, but it should be based on what's favorable for Krishna's service, not that it's too many headaches in this, and I have to deal with too many problems, too many problematic people, and just leave it. Not in that mood. Although that could be an impetus. But yeah, that central point, Krishna, and we just stay on that line. No artificial renunciation, no selfish gratification, but just serving Krishna. Whatever is favorable for Krishna's service, I accept, and whatever is unfavorable, I reject. And if I can use something favorably in Krishna's service, I accept it. And if it can't be used favorably in Krishna's service, I reject it. And then we can proceed very happily and joyfully and make progress even while living in the world. Hare Krishna. Were there any questions or comments? All right. Prajapati Prabhu?
Sometimes some of us find ourselves in between the options.
Comment on that.
Yes, this is a special feature of Kali Yuga. People are sort of between brahmachari and grihastha, between grihastha and vanaprastha. That is too common as well. Yeah, that is too common. In the old days, we used to have a name for young men who were between brahmachari and grihastha. We used to call them brahmastra. Like very volatile and could radiate intense heat. Be very dangerous. One answer, it may not address the issue of the ashram, but one thing Srila Prabhupada said with great emphasis and conviction is that in Kali Yuga, no one can follow perfectly. No. The brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, sannyasi, no one can follow perfectly. And Srila Prabhupada said, if we just become involved in finding the faults in others and their performance, we will lose our spiritual life. I will simply criticize you and you will simply criticize me. And therefore, because no one can follow perfectly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given the holy name, Chaitanya Sadahari. So I think whatever position we're in, and in Kali Yuga sometimes we're in very awkward positions. A husband with a child without a wife with a child without a husband, or a wife with a husband who has a girlfriend. I mean, there are a lot of very peculiar arrangements. I don't know if they even call them arrangements. Very awkward situation. And I think in those cases where there's no clear good solution, just take shelter of the holy name. I mean, that's what we should do in any situation. Just take shelter of the holy name. If we're in a relatively congenial and stable situation, it's good. We can put some effort into it to keep it congenial and stable. But if we're in an awkward situation where we don't really fit into any ashram, just take shelter of the holy name and pray for Krishna's mercy. I mean, it generally works better if one is in one ashram or the other, but Kali Yuga so cruel, so hard, we may be find ourselves in an awkward situation and not have a quick or easy solution. But take shelter of the holy name, take shelter of the scriptures, take shelter of the association of more advanced devotees, and that will help us in spite of our awkward situation. Yes, Tom?
Thank you very much for the wonderful class, Marsh. My question is that in devotional service, we're being encouraged to have loving relationships, devotionally based relationships, on one hand, and then on the other hand, we're cultivating a mood of detachment. The two seem incompatible, you know, at least in a public discussion. And I was wondering if you could reconcile that, please.
Yes. Actually, well, I think it's more true that we're meant to cultivate loving relationships than that we're meant to cultivate detachment. We're really meant to cultivate pure devotional service, and a natural byproduct of pure devotional service is detachment. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you know, Srila Rupa Goswami lists 64 items of devotional service. And after doing so, he mentions some items that he did not include in the list, and he explains why he did not include them. And one of the items is the cultivation of renunciation, vairagya. And he explains that the cultivation of vairagya through artificial austerities makes the hard heart, makes the heart hard. Whereas bhakti, which is essentially hearing and chanting about Krishna, makes the heart soft. So the cultivation of, you know, dry philosophical speculation or artificial renunciation are not accepted as items of bhakti because they tend to make the heart hard. But sense gratification also makes the heart hard. So the only thing that makes the heart soft really is bhakti. But, so, yeah, we need to make an effort, like to follow the four principles. You know, we have to make an effort to give up certain weakness, you know, lethargy or certain weaknesses that are unfavorable to devotional service. I mean, we do have to do that. But the focal point should be, you know, progressing in devotional service and pleasing Krishna. It shouldn't be, you know, to acquire knowledge or detachment. But cultivating loving exchanges, you know, the dati pratigrina, that is definitely part of devotional service that we do cultivate. Yes, Rasaraj Prabhu, and then Dvaita Acharya.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your nice presentation. Maharaj, you mentioned the urges of the body, and we sometimes in any ashram, for that matter, there are our past sanskaras, there are our past
traumas
possibly. We carry our baggage, basically, in whichever ashram that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
And to in certain situations, it almost in interactions with devotees, and specifically with your wife or the husband, those sometimes come out, and then you're not so sure why you actually did certain things. But it's after the fact. That sometimes it's based off of anger, sometimes it's based off of lust, sometimes it's based out of various other things which are the baggage that you carry. And then, though you're continuing in devotional service, and in many cases, even in the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that, out of providence, I was speaking to Mukunda Datta Prabhu yesterday about the same thing. By the hand of providence, certain thing happened. The previous story of Sukanya, by the hand of providence, she actually hurt the muni. So how does one reconcile go back and fix the situation when it is specifically derived out of that sanskara that is?
We should be very careful in our dealings with devotees. They might be our spouses, they might be our children, they might be our parents. They're devotees, and we should be very careful in our dealings with them. And if by chance, due to the whatever force of providence or force of the urges, anger, speech, we do hurt them, we should, we should apologize, beg their forgiveness, and we should try not to repeat the same mistake. And not repeating the same mistake may include some adjustments in one's lifestyle. We all experience being influenced by different modes, more predominantly at different times. And, the chances of that type of interaction that leads to hurting the other person is more likely when we're more influenced by the mode of passion or ignorance. So we want to adjust our life in such a way that we're not prone to be so influenced by the lower modes that will lead us to hurt people, out of anger, frustration, whatever. And that may include completely, reorganizing one's life. To take rest early, to get up early, to chant good rounds in the morning, to not overeat, so that one's frame of mind is more congenial to one's relationship with one's family members or other devotees. That's sort of part of what it means to accept what's favorable and reject what's unfavorable. I'll give a very small example, but it was very striking. In Juhu, probably, 1974, 75, before the new temple opened, two devotees had a big argument. Big argument. And one ran up to Srila Prabhupada's room, and then the other ran up to Srila Prabhupada's room to complain. And Srila Prabhupada said the problem was that they were eating too much Mahaprasad, and that was putting them in the mode of passion. Congenial relationships means, being more in the mode of goodness. I mean, ideal is transcendental, you know, to whatever degree we can be on the spiritual platform, and to whatever degree we're not on the spiritual platform, at least in the mode of goodness. So we want to adjust our life in such a way that we're in the mode of goodness, from which it's easier to progress to the transcendental platform. That may mean a number of adjustments in our lifestyle. Of course, at the moment, you could take a deep breath and, you know, pray to Krishna to help you. I would say that would be a good principle. If things are building up and you can see they're heading to some sort of clash, if you have the presence of mind to do it before it happens, you can say, anyway, maybe we should, you know, continue this discussion later. Just, you know, come in front of the deities or go for a japa walk or, you know, confide in a trusted friend till things are a little more peaceful, congenial for further discussion.
Thank you, Maharaj. I can't remember, but is this the verse where Radharani's names appeared in the Bhagavad? I mean, directly?
No, that's in the 10th canto.
That's in
Nunama Radito Nuyam.
Because it comes up here in the first Radha Krishna line, the first line.
Yeah.
There, but it's...
It's the same idea. But there... Yeah. That's a wonderful position to be on, to see the holy name of Radharani in the word worship, which it does include the word of Radharani, the name of Radharani. She worships Krishna the best.
And it's so nice that they are so close, Radha Krishna, in the same line.
Mm-hmm. I think I should sit down and you should sit here and really unpack the inner glories of this, not even verse, just one line. Thank you very much. So, thank you. Are you doing the 11 o'clock program? Yeah. So, we have many nice programs planned for the weekend at 11 o'clock. His Holiness Guru Prasad Swami will be speaking to the, I guess, Namahatta group in Flower Bank? Flower Mount. Govardhan, Jamuna. And then I'll be speaking in the evening at a program in Richardson at Sanjay Gupta and Lalita's place. And then tomorrow evening, the big Sunday program with His Holiness Guru Prasad Swami, His Holiness Indradumya Swami, and your humble servant. So hope to have more of your association, more and more of your association. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Kalachanji ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.